You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. And joining me, as always, is Wayne McCurry, who's a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment. Since we last spoke, Wayne, we've had a long weekend, and it's been long the market because the S&P and all the other US indices have gone to all-time record highs, and there's been announcements of trillions here and there, and I'm losing track of the trillions. I'm a trillion track loser at the moment, but it's been an extraordinary period.
Yes, it has been. I mean, when you think a year ago when the markets were collapsing around our ears, it was almost impossible to conceive that they could recover and recover so quickly and give you such spectacular returns, even considering that this was the, you know, the worst, last year was the worst set of economic circumstances in 10 years, you know, ever since the global financial crisis.
Yes.
And because we didn't know, everyone who's been in the market a long time understands recessions and economic crisis. The first time we had a health crisis that led to an economic crisis. But yeah, we are. I mean, even our local market, yeah, has done, you know, quite well.
It's done very well. It's not at record highs at the moment, but that's probably a Rand story.
It's not
because
far from it, yeah.
Yeah, but not far from it, as you quite rightly say, and a completely different picture to a year ago that you've just referenced. What the theme of my last few interviews or the last few days of interviews has been is this a short-term jab in the arm, if you like, using that reference, using that analogy?
Yeah.
Is it people going out and saying, right, I'm going to go and spend now and we are looking forward to a COVID-free world and we need therefore to go out and spend and have some fun, which we haven't been able to do for the last year or so. And then after that, there'll be a bit of a hangover. What do you think? Do you think this is all sustainable?
Look, ultimately over long time periods, interest rates where they are now are unsustainably low.
Right.
So whether that's 5 years or 10 years or 1 year, unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that. I think it's longer than 1 year. But at record low interest rates, and we've been here for a while.
A long time.
You know, a long time, for 10 years. But not at these levels. I mean, I'm not talking short term now. I'm talking long term. Because truly, when you talk about share markets, it's the long term interest rates that actually count. You know, they were up at 3%, then last year they fell to 1.7, and they went to 0.6, and now they're back at 1.7.
Right.
But 1.7 in context is still very, very low.
Way below the average of whether it be 5, 10,
below.
Or 30 years. Yeah.
Ooh,
way below.
Yeah, way, way below that. So over time, they will go up. But where we are now, people are looking at low interest rates. The economy worldwide, not South Africa, unfortunately, but the economy worldwide is going to have a stormer year this year. I mean, the economic forecasts are unbelievably high.
I saw yesterday, I've seen two, Wayne, just to embellish your point here. I saw two. I mean, the IMF, which is a conservative and august institution, saying 6% for global growth. And I saw somebody saying today that the US economy this year might grow between 8 and 10%. And this is the world's biggest economy. China growing at between 6 and 6.5% is one thing. But America, between 8 and 10%, albeit off a low base, is quite astonishing.
No, it's astonishing. And the U.S., remember the U.S. shrank, was it 3%, 2.5%, 3% last year? So
yes.
they're going to recoup that loss and again if they're growing at 9%.
Yeah.
You know, literally. But all of this boils down to a central theme we've been talking about for a long, long time. Is this stimulus? Now, stimulus in its broadest context, low interest rates, government expenditure, quantitative easing, central bank involvement, all of these things. Is this sustainable? Is this truly a free lunch? Because for 10 years, it's been a free lunch. There hasn't been a consequence of this massive excess liquidity. Now, just to come back to the definition of liquidity, and I know I'm not an economist, thank goodness for that, I'm an accountant, but to me, money supply is still relevant. In other words, M1, M2, and M3. Now, just to define M1, M1 is the money that's being thrown at the problem. M3 is the money that's being spent in the economy, and M2 is in the middle there somewhere. So it's not an economist's definition, but be that as it may. The M1 money supply, in other words, the amount of money that's being thrown at the problem, is significantly higher now than what it was in the global financial crisis. When you look at a graph of M1 money supply, you can virtually not even see the blip in M1 money supply in 2008, 2009 in the global financial crisis in comparison to the current absolute wave, tsunami of money. Now, is there a consequence to all of this?
Of course there is.
Because people going out, well, there wasn't in the global financial crisis.
But the global financial crisis, Wayne,
negative consequence.
I'm interrupting you again. But the global financial crisis was a very, very arrogant reaction by the financial markets to say, oh, well, a couple of banks have gone bust and therefore the financial system has frozen temporarily. And it really was nothing. It was just a blip from which we bounced back easily because of the actions of the central banks. Exactly. So there was that was a short-term consequence of people's greed and stupidity. But what we're seeing at the moment is something that is far, far broader and it's still continuing. Yeah, and it's still continuing.
Yeah. Yes. Now, the ultimately, this question boils down to the fact that will the so-called animal spirits be revived? Will people just say, damn it, look at interest rates, look how cheap they are, look how the stock market's done, look how much money I've got in my share portfolio, in my pension fund, the price of my house, et cetera, et cetera. Let me go and do what I did in 2003 and 1996 and 1992 and 1982 and 1964. Just go out and spend like there's no tomorrow.
They're going to.
I don't think so. Well, I think people's psyche, psyche has been affected by this. People are just more conservative. It's been, even though the U.S. economy is growing like crazy, it'll still have fewer jobs at the end of this year than it had 2 years ago. You know, so I hope you're wrong, because if you're right, the stock market will collapse around our ears. Because if you're right, interest rates will definitively go up.
Let's look at the world, Wayne, as a pub in England, okay? The pub has been closed for a long time. And you're sitting there.
Yes, terrible, yeah.
Yeah, and you're getting you're buying your beer from the takeaway counter or from online or something like that.
Yeah.
And you suddenly Boris Johnson says, right, we're opening the pub now. And you go to the pub and you spend. That's the world economy to me. The world economy is epitomized by the opening of the pubs in England. And I think that there will be a short-term splurge. Whether the splurge continues whether people are sated by this relief in able to go to the pub, the world economy may get this short-term boost, and the Suez Canal will be
short-term
released.
You'll survive.
You know what I'm saying, though. It's a release.
If it's short-term, that's fine. But if it's now sustainable, if people think these long-term interest rates are going to stay where they are for a sustained time period, and they continue not just this year, and inflation picks up, there's no ways any central bank in the world can ignore inflation. So if they ignore it by not raising interest rates, and you get negative interest rates, people will just spend more and more and more and more and more, and the currency will devalue, and the whole house of cards will fall down. If they don't ignore interest rates and inflation and increase interest rates, you know, the whole house of cards will fall down as well. So if the splurge by consumers is sustainable and results in higher inflation, we are in for an almighty correction in the market. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. Because just to take a step back, now I don't know the whole number, and I don't think anyone knows the whole number. But I reckon since the global financial crisis and last year and the virus and everything, there's probably been $40 trillion of money thrown at the problem in various formats. So this is the biggest financial experiment that we have ever seen in recorded history. There has never, ever been as much money thrown at these two problems as what we sit.
It's been relatively successful, today. Though, you have to admit. Even I have to admit it.
Totally. That's why I'm talking about a free lunch. It's been incredibly successful. It has literally saved the world and saved the stock market and saved pension funds and saved jobs and saved the housing
your job.
Market. It saved everything. Yeah, everything. No, totally. So what we have now is an economy worldwide that's going to storm forward this year, with incredibly high asset prices, with recovered, with banks that are fully liquid, with the housing market doing well, and some marked recovery in the jobs environment, not a full recovery. So it just sounds like a free lunch. And the free lunch will be sustained as long as inflation does not go up. Now, it's been eminently successful, but you're judging it on a relatively short time period, only 10 years or 12 years, in the total passage of time. I think it's going to be okay, but quite frankly, we don't know the answer yet. Only time will give us the answer.
Okay.
And I hope it's a good outcome. I sincerely hope it's a good outcome.
There has to be a correction, Wayne. There has to be a correction. But what the correction is triggered by, that is the key point, and that is where you will earn your money. That is you, where you will earn your monthly salary by picking the time. You're not going to pick the top. You're not going to pick the stock that's going to cause it, or you're not going to pick the economic event that's going to call it, or the geopolitical events that's going to cause it. You're going to just wait, and the first 2 or 3%, after that first 2 or 3% down on that day, then you're going to earn your money by getting out, or rather hedging against it.
Yeah. Our key, the key to all of this is inflation.
Yes.
So in other words, let's just take as you said, who the hell knows the timing? No one knows.
No.
But if commodity prices don't behave as normal, in other words, cyclically, if they stay high and they stay high for a sustained time period, 3 years, 2 years, that would worry me, because ultimately, commodity prices aren't hitting headline inflation yet. You know, it's just being absorbed into margins, essentially, because the consumer can't really take higher prices as we stand now. And if there's rampant consumer exuberance and governments continue to spend massive deficits at situations, inflation could pick up, and that's what we're going to monitor, because this is truly the key as to whether the next 12 years carries on or we have an almighty correction in the stock market. Because the true inflation is in the stock market. Eh?
It's not a bubble, but it's certainly a little bit overblown at the moment. But it can be overblown for another couple of years. I mean, I think it was Rothschild, or the head of the Rothschild Empire. I don't know what his name is or what year it is, but it's probably about 150 years ago. He said, the reason I'm so wealthy is because I got out early. It was something along those lines.
Yeah.
I sold early. Now, so you have to start selling early.
Yeah, just taking a very, very long time view, and I won't be alive to see the end of this particular view.
I wouldn't say that.
But I'm fairly certain that the next 30 years stock market returns will be a very small fraction of the last 30 years. In fact, it's 40 years stock market returns. It'll be maybe 20% return in nominal terms in comparison to the last 40 years. Because in the last 40 years, let me work it out. It's actually 50 years. Sorry. In the last 50 years, the biggest driver of stock market returns worldwide was the valuation of the stock market, not so much earnings, because the U.S. long bond went from 15% to 0.6 over 50 years.
Yes.
And that's your discount factor. So in other words, when I started on the stock market, the price earnings ratio in America was 8 or 9. You know, it's now 40. So that 8 or 9 to 40 gave you the majority of your returns over the last 50 years. Now, it's not going from 40 to 200 over the next 50 years. That's just not. So we are going to, over very long time periods now, see a significant lower return from the stock market simply because of that one factor, is that you started with the long bond at 15 and you're ending with the long bond below 2.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen again.
And the average is, I think, 5.3% for the 10-year. Yeah. And it's currently, as you say, quite right to say, 1.7%. So we're way down. The money's cheap. Money is cheap. Baron Rothschild or Baron Rothschild quote is, I never buy at the bottom and I always sell too soon. And that's how
selling too soon is not a problem.
He built his wealth there. Wayne, on the food front, how was your Easter weekend?
Yes.
Because it was a long weekend, so you probably did a little bit of Epicurean extravagance. What did you do?
Well, we did the one thing that's very normal, go to that very special place that serves you the most amazing Sunday roast. But I go there every week, and every week, it never, ever disappoints.
And it was open on Easter Sunday.
It was open on Easter Sunday. Now, I personally, the food wasn't disappointing. Mm. I was personally disappointed because the little Easter treat that they gave is they gave an Easter egg to all the ladies.
Well, that's sexist. That's biased. I don't applaud that at all. Why shouldn't you get one as a man?
Yeah, I didn't get an Easter egg, but putting that aside, the Sunday roast was, as per normal, just fantastic.
Okay.
It truly was fantastic. And then I did two other things.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a very, very nice Portuguese restaurant that's very close to my house, literally under a kilometer.
Yes.
And shame, when I drive past there, but it's the same with any restaurant, I'm not picking out this particular restaurant. There's at most two or three tables occupied. So even though you can do it, South Africans aren't really going out to eat because no restaurant I go to is full. So anyway, so I listened to the story that you had last week or the week before where you made salt and pepper calamari.
Oh, I sent you the pictures. Yeah, it's very delicious.
Yes, so I thought I'm going to go and get a grilled calamari. So okay. I ordered the grilled calamari.
Yeah.
But when it came, it was like in a soup. The calamari was in a soup.
Ah.
So I thought, this is not crispy grilled calamari.
No.
But then I tasted it.
And?
It was delicious.
What sort of soup? Was it tomato-based or what?
No. It was a garlic and lots of lemon in this like sauce. Not really a soup. It was like a sauce.
Okay.
But the amount of garlic and the lemon in it, it was just too delicious for words.
Oh.
And then the third thing we had is I had a good old-fashioned braaiflees.
In other words, so I mean, for people that don't know what a braaiflees is, it's a meat barbecue.
Yes, it's a barbecue, yeah. Mm. So I bought some, which I've never actually tried before, because normally I buy boerewors.
Yes.
A special flavor. But they didn't have any at the time. So I just bought from Checkers, I just bought their traditional South African boerewors.
Right.
And it was so succulent and delicious. It was actually truly fantastic. And then I did two special things that I always do on a braai.
Yes.
Get a big, big mushroom, fill it up with butter, upside down, fill it up with butter and garlic. And garlic and maybe one or two Tabasco drops to add a bit of thing. Then you put it on the braai upside down like that. And it never burns because it's got all the butter and that in it.
Uh-huh.
And it comes out delicious. And then the other thing is a thing called an oopsie.
A what?
Which is a skewer stick, an oopsie.
An oopsie?
O-O-P, oopsie, yeah, as in oopsie doopsie. It's a skewer stick that's got bacon on it with cherries. And you braai that. Too delicious for words. It was truly delicious. But then I also had a little bit of luck. I was scratching in the deep freeze. I went down to Durban or Pietermaritzburg 3-4 weeks ago.
Yes.
And there's a place on the way back near Nottingham Road called the Windmill. It's a whole big like roadside thing where they've got shops and garages and restaurants and coffee shops and curio shops and everything. But they got this one like delicatessen there where they sell millet bread.
Oh, you mean bread made from corn? Corn flour?
Yeah.
Now,
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's got pieces of corn in it, got pieces of mealies in it.
Oh,
and it's incredibly thick, you know, it's quite dense, for want of a better word. It's not light like bread, it's quite dense.
Yeah.
So I found this frozen, and I took it out, defrosted it, and I cut two or three slices, and I put it like that on the braai and grilled it on the braai and then put butter on it. Wow. Two delicious forwards. So those were my experiences over the Easter weekend.
Okay, well, I can't really match your culinary stories, but one thing I will say is that I'm moving to the south of Holland to an area called Zeeland, which is close to the Belgian border. I've got beaches, and it's a very rural area. In fact, in a town called Middelburg, which in South Africa would sort of conjure up images of coal mining, but this is a very, very...
Middelburg, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, but it's called Middelburg, and it's quite sort of medieval, and it's very rustic and pretty and everything, and I've got a nice flat there. So I go there and sort of try and sort my flat out, but I went to a local farm on my bicycle. And it's all organic. He's got cows and chickens and goats and all sorts of things. And I said, and I bought some eggs from him, some hen's eggs, to take home with me back to Rotterdam. And he said, "Do you like goose eggs?" I said, "Well, I've never actually had one." And he said, "Well, come back at 5 o'clock because my geese only lay for 2-3 months a year, unlike hens, and they usually lay at around about 4:30-5 o'clock. They're quite regular." So I went back at 5 o'clock, and sure enough, there were these two beautiful warm goose eggs, and I bought them from him for a penny. And I took them home to Rotterdam, and on Easter Sunday, I boiled one of them. I've kept the other one. I boiled one of them for about, he said, 8 to 10 minutes. So I boiled it, and I put it in a, I mean, they're huge things, I mean, compared to hen's eggs. And I chopped the top off as usual. I put some toast into the toaster, or rather some bread into the toaster, and I sliced it up into soldiers. And I dunked I love the soldiers. And I dunked it into this goose egg. And it tastes
so delicious.
It tastes completely different. And I didn't need to eat for about another 12 hours. A goose egg is a meal in itself. So the the next time you meet a goose, get it to give you an egg. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Egg or two.
Yeah.
Look, I must say that's one of my favorite breakfasts is a soft boiled egg.
Oh gosh.
With soldiers. But then I make a little pile, like a little pinch pile of salt and lots of pepper.
Yes.
And you put that into the egg and you eat it. Oh my goodness, is that delicious. In fact that's actually probably my favorite breakfast. But now for dinner this evening, I've just finished cooking before we got on the phone here.
Yes.
The simplest meal possible.
Go on.
You get chicken strips.
Yep.
You know, deboned, de-skinned, just chicken strips. Cut them into little bite-sized slices. Fry them until they're brown with a bit of butter and a bit of garlic. And then Woolworths. Now, Woolworths isn't always my favorite, but Woolworths sell these tins of Asian soup. So you get Massaman curry soup, you get Thai red curry soup, you get Tom Kha and a couple of other variants of these Eastern soups. And when the chicken and that is nicely browned with the garlic and a bit of butter and that, you just add the soup into the saucepan and you let the whole thing heat up and boil for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you have it with Melba toast with a bit of butter on. It is such a simple meal to cook, but it is truly delicious because you get all of these Eastern flavors, but you're getting a bit more bulk into it than just a soup. And it's so easy to cook. It's literally 10 minutes preparation, and you have this quite exotic, you know, Eastern Taiwanese type of meal at home.
Yes.
And they've got all the ingredients in the soup. They've got the lemongrass and the vegetables and all this, the coconut milk and all of that. You know, to try and reproduce that at home would take a huge effort from scratch. But you just go buy this tin of soup, chuck it into your chicken and some Melba toast, and it is delicious.
Sounds absolutely fantastic and simple, as you quite rightly say. Wayne, next week what I'll do is I'll tell you about when I used to work for a magazine called FHM, which was one of those lad mags that came out in the, I think it was in the early 2000s. And I used to, amongst many other things, because I was a a freelancer for them. I used to do their recipe page every month. Mm. And I will tell you about some of the recipes that I put out there, one of which was kangaroo tail. Not oxtail, but kangaroo tail. But anyway, that's for another time. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager and Epicurean at FNB Wealth and Investment. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.